Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Not much, man. Hey, I hosted Easter for the first time.
Really?
Easter dinner, family, all the... I'm not religious, but we do dinner. But yeah, we had all the people
rabbit?
Over to our house.
Have rabbit?
No.
Did you have Easter bunny for dinner?
We did lamb and pork loin and vegetables and pie and...
We did ham, potatoes, broccoli, carrots, more vegetables that I don't like, and cake. Like cake and ice cream.
Normally we would go to either my sister-in-law or my mother-in-law's house, but this year we hosted. First time ever.
Yeah, I found that once we started hosting holiday meals, like Christmas, Thanksgiving,
You started losing
Easter,
family members?
No, we... don't you tease me now. We end up hosting more. To the point where it's just like, we've hosted every meal so far this year.
It's a lot of work.
Right?
It's a lot of work.
That's why I go away for my October canoe trip and I show up just in time for dinner.
For Thanksgiving dinner.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanksgiving dinner and birthday cake.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Method to my madness.
Mm-hmm.
Good Easter, though?
It was. It was fantastic.
Lots of chocolate?
I didn't eat a single piece.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not a big sweets. I like my sweets, but I tend to like savory more. So there was chocolate there, and that was all weekend.
You're
but I didn't
weirdo.
Eat any. I know.
Oh, I've eaten a whole bunch of it now. I ran to work this morning. I got so much sugar in me now.
I didn't even have pie afterwards.
What?
I'm not a fan of dessert. If there's an ice sorbet or some ice cream, I'd do that. That's about it.
Yeah, but if you want an ice creme brulee.
I like to learn how to make that.
Oh, it's easy.
Yeah?
Yeah. Anything that involves fire while you're cooking. I used to do Cherry's Jubilee.
Oh,
yeah. And I used to do...
I've seen that on TV.
Yeah. I used to do a Cointreau shrimp.
Oh.
Yeah, over rice.
Hmm.
Yeah, anything you can set on fire and not burn the kitchen down is a win in my book. And all I got to do is look at Tracy and go, hey, we're going to make something in the kitchen here, something different. And she sees...
Should I pull the curtains?
So, no, it was good over this way. So, but I, on the other hand, do like my chocolate. And I ate plenty. And we had cake and ice cream and all that, which I ate plenty. other than that, well, it's a long week. It's weird having a Friday off.
It is. It is. It's very strange. It only happens, like, maybe at Christmas and at Easter. So that was interesting. That was... it's nice. It is nice having the long weekend, that extra day. And so I had the Friday off and the Monday off, but Siobhan had to work Monday, so just me and the kids on Monday.
So. Yeah, I had to work Monday.
Did you?
Yeah, I just got the 3 days.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a toss-up whether people get the fourth day or not.
Mm-hmm, I know, yeah. Right. I did. I got the fourth day. It was nice.
Well, I did do something on the weekend, though, on the Saturday. Sunday.
Sunday. I saw pictures.
Because it was the last day of March, and... there was something that needed to be done because I've been having that back issue.
Oh, yes.
But it was actually getting a lot better now.
Mm-hmm.
So I went for my March paddle.
Ah, so right? You got the last day of March.
The very last day of April. Last day of March.
Last day of April?
Or sorry, February.
Oh.
Last day of February.
So did you go the next day and get April 1st?
No, because I had to work.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
But we went, John Brower and myself, we went up to Dufferin's Creek and checked it out. And it's risen a little bit.
Yeah. I saw that you collected a lot of debris and garbage.
Oh, yeah. Everything's drab down there this time of year. Well,
anywhere
you go, right?
Yeah, there's no leaves aren't out yet. Nothing's, it's not.
No.
The garbage is in the woods isn't quite hidden yet.
Yeah, and everything, I mean, anything that had snow on it was hiding some of the garbage and whatnot, but... yeah, everything's like brown and drying out.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
current, yeah, is moving all the garbage downstream now.
Yes, know? The spring freshet is kind of washing the...
Well, and with milder temperatures, the weekend parties along the riverbank have started again. Yeah. Like, there was a couple new fire pits we saw that, you know, there have definitely been some people having some brews and whatnot. So, usually when we're out... any time of year, but especially now. I took the canoe, and John took his kayak. But we skirt the shoreline there and start picking up plastic bottles and other debris and throw them in the canoe. And then at the end, we just pick up the canoe and carry it right to the garbage cans.
Yeah.
A lot of plastic bottles, a lot of golf balls. It's surprising how far the golf balls travel downriver from the old Annandale Golf Club.
But I'm surprised you're still finding golf. I guess it's because of low water.
Mm-hmm.
Because that golf course has been closed for, 10 years?
No. Only a few years now.
Yeah?
Yeah. But the fact that they're still, like, the golf balls have migrated that far.
Yes, yeah.
Right? A lot of golf balls, a lot of hooks and bobbers from the trees.
Mm-hmm.
We practiced reduce, reuse, recycle. We reduced the number of bobbers and hooks in the trees and reduce, reuse, recycle. We recycled them by giving them to some fishermen. Because a lot of them are like new bobbers.
Yeah.
Like
if
I did that much fishing and needed them, I would have been scooping them out and putting them in my truck.
Yeah.
And they will reuse them.
And put them back in the trees.
And put them back in the trees later. Reduce, reuse,
I'll come
recycle.
Back in a month and get these ones.
Well, actually, the one guy said, if you keep going, there's a bobber floating. I just lost it. And sure enough, we go down, there was another bobber floating. That must be his, buddy. I think they're like probably like $8 a pop or something nowadays.
And I know lures are, last time I went fishing.
Oh, lures are expensive.
Last summer, I went to Sail and I took a long look for lures, trying to find some cheap ones. And it's like, I wanted to do some fly fishing. So I bought some flies. They were pretty cheap. I found the discount rack, but, just regular lures, like for like bass or whatever, you're talking like $12-15.
Yeah,
and it's like,
not
what's
cheap.
Going on?
It's not cheap anymore.
It is a bit cheaper at Canadian Tire, but you get what you pay for, right? They're going to be rusted in a year. And
well, if all else fails, you just get yourself a Coke can and you cut a spoon out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Put a treble hook on it, which you can get a bunch of them for pretty cheap. And there you go.
Yeah.
Bob's your uncle.
Make your own.
So yeah, we got a whole bunch of that. And the weirdest thing we found on the day was a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
John just goes, we're paddling and I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, what does that look like to you? And he goes, fire extinguisher. I go, okay, it's not just me. And he reached down because it was easier for him to.
Was it underwater?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was in about a foot of water.
Yeah.
So he just reached down, pulled it out. And
so I guess it was empty.
It was empty. So, took that back as well and put that in my truck. And then on the way home, there's like 2 minutes from my house, there's a fire station.
Oh, okay.
So I stopped in there and said, hey, friends, just paddling the river, doing some cleanup. And we came across this. And they're like, really? Yep. Where would I
get rid of this?
And he goes, we can take that off your hands for you. So,
I don't know if you can just throw them in the garbage or not.
I don't think I imagine you could, but I don't think it'd be good for it. There's probably somewhere else that can get.
I guess if it's not pressurized, it could just go in the regular garbage, but it is metal, it could be recycled. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of those green propane canisters that you can't just throw away because they'll have some propane left on them. And
I thought, you know, I'm just going to go to the fire hall and they'll tell me what I can do with it. They just took it right off my hand. So got that taken care of. And lots of swans and ducks and geese.
They're back.
Oh, tons of red-winged blackbirds.
Oh, yeah? Nice. Yeah.
Kevin Callan, I'm sure it was him that had said it a few years back. Everybody says the robin is the sign of spring, when actually the red-winged blackbirds are the true sign of spring.
Yeah.
When all the red-winged blackbirds are back, you know it's spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there was dozens of them.
I've been seeing a lot of seagulls.
Yeah,
I haven't seen the cormorants back yet.
Nope, some seagulls.
They'll be back soon.
It was overcast. It was starting to spit, like a misty sort of deal, just a little bit when we were putting in.
Was there a bunch of kids on a bridge above you?
Nope, I looked, and there wasn't a hobo. I'm not falling for a hobo peeing over the bridge a third time.
Not a third time.
But no, you know, it was overcast and stuff like that to begin with, but nice temperature outside. We did have our dry suits on. The water's still rather cold.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's not shirt and shorts season yet.
Not yet.
But it was really nice temperature to be paddling outside and whatnot. So yeah, my March paddle is out of the way. Now I just got April to do, and that is it.
Nice.
That's my whole year done.
Mm-hmm.
12 months of paddling.
Next year, 365 days of paddling.
Ooh.
Or at least 52 weeks. Go to weekly?
Yeah, it's kind of hard, though.
That'd be tough.
Yeah.
Life's busy.
If I was retired.
Yeah.
I would probably be looking at maybe twice a week.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Mm-hmm.
For a year. Or 10. Or 20. Yeah. Now to...
If you owned a recirculating whitewater park.
Oh,
you easy. Could do it.
Yeah, let me just go buy one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right? I sent you a link to one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's let me for just sale. Go down there and buy it. And
minimum bid is $2 million.
Yeah, but that's in, was that in South Carolina, North Carolina?
I can't remember where it was. Yeah. But yeah, it's for sale, but it's estimated it cost him $20 million to build it, and his lowest bid he'll take is $2 million. Starting at $2 million. Bids, I'm sure he's not expecting to go to much more than $2 million, because there's a lot of value there. But still.
I'll give him $2 million and one.
It's like 18 acres.
Just to tear it down or to keep it going?
No, to keep it going. Endless recirculating.
Hmm. Yeah. No, that's not something I'd get into. Because you know what? Something like that, a business, as cool as a business like that would be, that is your life.
That is, yeah.
There's no going anywhere else.
Think of Marion and Dwayne with their bearskin
lodge.
That's going to be.
But that's where they like to be.
That's where they, exactly.
Right? That's where they like to be up
that
there.
So will be their vacation.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're at this same sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, with that thought in mind, think about this. When somebody pees in that recirculating river, that pee
it's
just
there forever.
Recirculates and recirculates. Right? I'm sure there's a disclaimer. Please do not pee in the river. It stays forever.
You just peed on yourself 10 times. You're soaking in it. Oh. Oh man. Yeah, no, something like that. I couldn't. That's just like a cottage.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing with a cottage. Like, it's pretty cool, and I've toyed with the idea of getting a cottage or a cabin or something like that. And just when you're sitting there thinking, you know what? Let's do it. You go home and you think about it and you're like, no. Yeah. Let's not do it.
What you would pay in taxes every year would rent you a cottage that you just have to go once, use, and leave.
Yeah.
And so
no extra upkeep, no fixing stuff, no
roof,
mowing lawns,
no plumbing, no closing it down for winter and opening up in the spring. And
you can go other places.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, because you're sitting there going, you know what? I got 9 days holiday. Why don't we
go to that same
go somewhere?
Lake.
Oh, well, the cottage needs this doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
do the deck and we need to do that. And you're just like,
yeah.
Time to sell the cottage.
The well pump is starting to break again. We have to replace that. And
yeah, there's too many places I want to go to just keep going to the same place. If that's your cup of tea, man, then all power to you. Me, it's just not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just not my bag.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of money and it's just the same thing.
Yeah.
A lot of maintenance.
Now, if I was a billionaire,
somebody maintains it for me.
I would
me.
Buy a cottage, go to it for a week, then sell it.
Yeah.
And then next time I want to go somewhere, buy a cottage, go there for a couple of weeks, then sell it. Or just walk away from it. Give the keys to the neighbor, go, cheers now.
Yeah. A buddy of mine, he has a cottage. He doesn't even use it himself. He just rents it out.
Yeah.
All year long.
Maybe when he retires or something.
No, he bought it as a an investment property. He's a real estate agent. He has, he's got all kinds of resources for that. So he bought a cottage, tore it down, built a new one, and it rents for like a couple thousand a week.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's not a typical cottage.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not my thing. But anywho. So other than that, you didn't do anything this weekend. I didn't do anything else this weekend. Just paddling and eating.
Well, because we had people
and lounging around.
Because we had people over, I did a lot of cleaning.
Wow. Well,
house gets cleaned occasionally.
I got out of that by going paddling.
Yeah.
You have not learned yet, young Padawan. Make plans for the morning of.
Stella's a bit of a neat freak. Her room is always so clean. And so after we finished cleaning the whole house, she's like, why can't it look like this all the time?
Because you kids.
It's Beckett. He's the one. It is Beckett.
Yeah. If you can train your brother,
mm-hmm.
then it'll be like this all the time. let's move on here. We got a few things to talk about tonight. There is no rhyme nor reason to tonight's show, just a whole bunch of other little thingies. It is the beginning of April.
Mm-hmm.
April Fool's Day was
here and gone.
Here and gone.
I didn't prank a single person.
I saw something traversing. Evan.
Oh, Evan
had something on his site. Did you see the canoe spring?
I didn't see it.
I'm thinking, you know what? As much of a joke as it is, I could see using it. So basically, it looks like one of the car springs from your car, but not as heavy duty.
Yeah.
And you put it on the end, like the stern of your canoe.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're portaging and you lift the bow up.
Oh, and you bang it?
And you, instead of banging it, it bounces.
Yeah.
So your stern will bounce off the ground instead of hitting the ground and destroying your canoe. I'm thinking, you think that's a joke.
I would use that.
I would use that. I could use that.
I bang the end of canoe all the time on portages. Right?
Yeah.
All the time.
So that was his, he had that on his page there. And I'm just thinking, you think it's a joke, Evan? Dude, I've got a canoe out in the garage that has a busted tail end there. So, if you want a fun opportunity to enjoy some relaxation on Earth Day this year, which is April 20th, and you want to help clean the Blue River.
Where's the Blue River?
Milltown, Indiana.
But I think everybody has these too. Like they're doing it, but I think there's always the spring, what do they call it? The beach cleanup or river walks.
Yeah,
or
the
whatever.
River walks, river cleanup, shore. Yeah,
it's
shore
like
cleanup.
Everybody gets together and cleans up the places that they love to recreate.
Yeah. Uh oh, did you just break the microphone?
It's loose.
It's loose. It's still working.
It's still working.
Still working there. Milltown, Indiana. Cave Country Canoes offers all kind of outdoor adventure from April to October every year, and they host camping, kayaking, canoes on the Blue River. They also no stranger to hosting fun events like their Twilight Canoe and Dinner for Two trips.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Right? According to their website, Cave Country Canoes not only allows people to canoe or kayak down the Blue River, they also have a mission to protect the environment of the Blue River as it was Indiana's first designated scenic river.
There you go.
Their website says, we are dedicated to providing a safe, fun Blue River kayaking experience for all our guests while preserving and protecting the environment of the Blue River, Indiana's first designated scenic river. And now you can help them continue that mission by participating in their free Earth Day canoe and kayak event. If you want to help Cave Country Canoes continue their mission of preserving and protecting the Blue River, and you want a canoe for free, which is always a good price, their cleanup event is perfect for you. April 20th, Earth Day, Cave Country Canoes hosting free half-day trips with free boat rental if you volunteer to help clean up the river. have times starting as early as 9:45 a.m. and leaving as late as 11:45 a.m. You want to enjoy some free canoeing or kayaking while doing your part to help keep the river clean? Go to the website, look under the events tab, cavecountrycanoes.com.
Cool.
So, yeah, this is a time of year coming up where people, when the weather starts getting nicer and the water gets warmer, a lot of groups start saying, hey, let's get out there and do some cleaning.
Exactly.
I mean, we were out there this
weekend.
Like
what you did on the weekend. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the best time because the leaves haven't filled in, and so you can see all the stuff along the shorelines, and it's easier to clean up, easier to find the garbage.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, people are still irresponsible enough to be dumping stuff like that.
But, well, you know what? Like, there's some of the bigger logs and stuff collect all the garbage, and because, like you say, the shoreline is, like, it's all brown and trampled, and none of the leaves and that are starting to come out again to hide the garbage.
Yeah.
So if you can get into all those spots before all the greenery starts puffing out, then you can get in at all that extra garbage and stuff and hopefully clean it up. So, yeah, 'tis the season. The Humboldt Broncos.
Yes.
Do you remember the bus crash?
That was 2018 or something, right?
2018. The hockey team, Humboldt Broncos hockey team, hit by a semi-truck.
In Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Yeah. So one of the survivors, their goalie of the bus crash, has qualified for the 2024 Paralympics in Paris. Rowing Canada says Jacob Wasserman has earned Canada a country quota spot in the event known as PR1 Men's Single Sculls. 24-year-old who trains in Saskatoon recently competed for Canada in a continental qualification regatta in Rio de Janeiro. Wasserman played goalie for the Broncos, one of 13 survivors of the deadly 2018 bus crash, which left him paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
16 people were killed when the junior hockey team's bus collided with a semi-truck in a rural intersection in Saskatchewan. Big story up here in Canada.
That's, yeah.
Like all across Canada. That was huge. But to go from that to now.
Exactly.
You know.
And now he's going to compete
in the Paralympics in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Good on him. Have to. Hopefully he does really well and. We'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Another little tidbit here. We're going to be talking a few things about books tonight. This one has absolutely nothing to do with paddling. It's just
funny
and weird. The Louisville Free Public Library shared on Facebook that two books checked out by the family of music legend Morris Perlmutter King in the 1920s were finally returned. Library officials say King checked out the book titled Famous Composers and Their Works in 1924 when he was 14 years old, and he never brought it back. King's family told library officials that the book helped spark his interest in music, which eventually took him to Sin City. King initially played the violin in Louisville Orchestra and moved west to start his band and release new music. He became a headliner during the early days of the Las Vegas Strip and was close friend to the Rat Pack. Musician was born in 1909 to Russian Jewish immigrant parents. His mom, Miriam Mary Perlmutter, also checked out a book covering Russian language in 1927 and never returned it. This is a family trait. Don't give anybody name a book. King died in 1993 at the age of 83. His son Michael found the books in his L.A. home several years later, and he, along with family members, finally returned the books to the library. So even if you found them and you didn't immediately go to the library, you held on to them for a few more years just to make sure. You're humming and hawing. We are not the owners of this property. We were merely custodians of this property.
For 100 years.
Yeah. And as a custodian, we had a duty to return it to its rightful owners. And the fact that it brought together our family and brought together all of us at this very happy moment is well worth it. Library officials said the family could have incurred about $7,800 in fines with inflation, but the library recently transitioned to being fine-free to encourage people to return long overdue materials. That's go. What they were waiting for.
Yeah.
I'm not returning this thing until it's free. 100 years.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow. Like, those have got to be like first editions.
I know, right?
I wonder if the books are worth more.
Well, and I wonder how much that sparked his interest. So he, the book was called Famous Composers and Their Works.
Well, that's what
and
they said. It sparked his interest.
Yeah. So he probably used that book a lot.
He probably has a couple other copies from different libraries.
Yeah. And he kept it that whole time.
Right.
They found it in his collection.
It's probably like in his shoebox at the bottom of his closet. Totally, probably forgot it.
Or maybe it had a prominent spot right on his bookshelf at eye level.
Or it was with his comic books.
Yeah.
It was in the back of his classroom. That's where that went. So we talked back in the fall, there's an article that came out about Parks Canada closing lakes and the whirling...
Whirling disease. Mm-hmm.
So in the Parks Canada closed lakes, rivers, ponds, wetland streams, and creeks in Kootenay National Park, which is east of Radium Hot Springs, until March 2024. Well, March is done. And it made the decision after it found the parasite that causes whirling disease in Yoho National Park. Water bodies in Yoho were also closed because it borders Kootenay National Park. Whirling disease has extremely high mortality rates, up to 90%, in certain kinds of fish, including iconic Columbia Valley species such as kokanee salmon, west slope cutthroat trout, and mountain whitefish.
So I think it's whirling because they just keep swimming in circles until they die or something.
At the time, Parks Canada, Lake Louise, Yoho, and Kootenay Field Unit aquatic ecologist Shelley Humphreys explained that the closures were a precaution taken to prevent the spread of the parasite while Parks Canada figures out its next steps. Well, they figured it out. Last week, Parks Canada extended the water body closures in Kootenay and Yoho for a full year until March 2025. Federal agency has outlined in a statement that it's spent the winter months analyzing its options, and the continued closures will help protect fish and allow Parks Canada to conduct further sampling and monitoring. There's no treatment for whirling disease, and once the disease is established, it is extremely difficult to eradicate. So another whole year.
And it makes sense when you think about how it spreads.
It sucks, but it's
like an invasive species, and we are one of the main carriers of it in our watercraft, our you know, hip boots and whatever, right?
So kokanee salmon, west slope cutthroat trout, and mountain whitefish are important ecologically. Both kokanee and west slope cutthroat trout are considered keystone species in certain ecosystems. All three species are very popular with anglers and tourists who visit the valley to fish, and all three species, especially the kokanee, hold significant for local First Nations. The cases of whirling disease in Yoho last year were the first cases anywhere in BC, but the disease has been present in nearby parts of Alberta for several years. And I've never heard that till we were talking about it.
Last fall, yeah.
Yeah, that there it had been actually has been in Alberta. Disease probably spread across the continental divide by hitching a ride on recreational equipment such as fishing gear, stand-up paddle boards, kayaks, or boats. It's the most likely method of transfer. People and recreational activities, especially if they don't handle their equipment properly or clean it well, Humphrey says. And see, when we drove across Canada, I made sure I washed my boats first before we took them across. To make sure fishing equipment boats are truly whirling disease free, all water, mud, and plant matter must be thoroughly removed and the equipment then left to dry for a minimum 48 hours before it is used in a different water body. This process is inconvenient, especially for those who want to visit a certain lake one day and a different lake the next, but it's necessary. Humphreys, an avid angler herself, has two pairs of waders. If she visits two different fishing spots one weekend, she uses a different pair of waders at each. So if you're thinking you're going to go out and do some fishing and paddling in Yoho or Kootenay, it's not happening this year.
No, and it's like it's close. It's like no water, no water activities.
Yep. No swimming, no nothing.
Yeah.
Again, sucks, but it's definitely
needed. Well, and we caused it.
Yeah. Well, not we.
Well, not we.
But Derek did it.
The royal we.
It was Derek. Derek went out there. Derek spread her invasive diseases. Yeah. Humans can't be careful and take the diseases with them.
Exactly, yeah.
Then this is what's going to happen.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things in nature. So I was having a chit-chat with John while we were paddling. He was in his kayak, and he's got this nice Kevlar, really, really lightweight kayak paddle.
Mm-hmm.
And we get talking about Greenland paddles and stuff like that. I know a lot of kayakers that I paddle with have Greenland paddles. You've got a Greenland paddle.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's, oh, they're so great. They're, you know, all the benefits to them. And my beater paddle, and we call it a beater paddle because it gets the crap beaten out of it. And I've talked about this paddle before. It's my favorite paddle. It's got a crack up the middle. Well, now it's got a massive chunk out of it. Don't know where that happened, but it happened on Sunday.
Yeah.
I was using it to prop myself in on shore to grab some garbage. Yeah. But then I was paddling and I noticed, there's a big chunk missing out of my paddle somewhere.
Get attacked by a shark?
Yeah. So he says, time for a new one. And I said, I'm just going to use this till it looks like a single-bladed Greenland paddle. To which I then considered a question. If Greenland paddles, kayakers just expound on how great Greenland paddles are. Why is there not a single-bladed Greenland paddle for canoeists? Explain.
Well, personally, I think it's because Greenland paddles are, they're easy on the joints, easy on the shoulders. You're not going to win any races, but it's, you're not pulling in as much water as you would with a deeper cupped paddle, right?
Yeah.
So you're getting there when you get there. You're out there, but you're enjoying it. But for a canoe, to do any effort in a canoe, especially if you're solo, you have one paddle, and if it's a Greenland-style single-bladed paddle, you're not going anywhere too quick.
Well, that's the whole point of enjoying yourself on the water.
Sure, sure, sure.
You need something just to act as a rudder.
So basically what you're thinking is, I just need a slim-down 2x4.
Yeah, I just need a stick. Well, I take all the time to shape that into a big blade.
Well, we have experience similar to that is when we went canoe poling in the deeper sections, you use the canoe pole as a paddle.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like if it's good, because you pay some good money for a paddle, a good paddle. Well, you could get like a discount paddle rack, just a shaft that widens maybe an inch.
Yeah, yeah.
Give us some shape and form. Think how light it would be. Just think how light it would be. That's my next business venture.
Yeah.
Canoe Greenland paddles, single bladed.
I think it's nice because when you'd use the, well, I'm just going to ramble off the top of my head. It's a stream of consciousness here. Well, when you're doing like a J-stroke or you're doing a pull or you're any of those extreme measures when you're trying to turn a canoe around or do whatever, with a kayak, you have two blades. And so it's easier to maneuver. Plus, a lot of kayaks has a rudder or skeg or something to help out with that. So it does make sense.
See?
But I would be interested now to try it. Maybe I'll take one of my paddles. I'll shave it down into a thin stick and
see. I'll just go buy a 2x4.
Carve down a 2x4.
Carve down a 2x4. Coat it down. Yeah. Yeah. Good old Betty the single-bladed. Anyway, that was just, these are conversations that are held on the water.
Yep.
And then when you get home and my wife asks, so what'd you talk about? I say, nothing. Because I don't know, she wants to know what we were talking about.
Yeah,
mind you, we did also have the conversation that maybe it's time for me to exchange my wife and daughter for new ones.
Yeah,
because when we got out of the water, usually I'll just say just loading up and heading home.
Yeah,
I said loading up, making a stop at the fire station. To which the question would be,
why?
There was no why. There was no batting of an eyelash, yeah. Nothing.
Okay, stop at the fire station.
Stop at the fire station, okay. Whatever. Like, it didn't surprise them anymore. The thrill is gone. I didn't even bat an eyelash. Well, of course, when I got home, you stopped at the fire station? Yeah, because we found a fire extinguisher. Oh. Really? Oh,
I thought you lost a finger or something. No, I would have gone to the hospital for that.
Yeah, no, I probably wouldn't have. Yeah, didn't even bat an eyelash. Yeah. There was no why. I was so disappointed. Yeah. So disappointed. So, yeah. So there was another question or comment conversation we had.
Yeah.
Which, when, so what'd you guys talk about? Nothing? That's just pure life preserving. Speaking of life preserving, sort of.
Okay.
Over two decades, the Paddler Co-op. I got this article. Yes. I actually, this article here I got from Paddling Magazine.
Yeah.
This has been out different places, but they wrote this one up pretty good. So
it's the first I heard of it.
Two decades, the Paddler Co-op has been a cornerstone of the river running community on the banks of the Madawaska in Palmer Rapids, Ontario. It's just north of Kingston. Now the future of the beloved cooperative is at stake and rallying to secure its home permanently. Paddler's Co-op is a 2.7-acre property, is a valuable slice of waterfront real estate. Anything waterfront days is... Yeah. You know, complete with highway frontage, a campground, an office building, and a garage for equipment storage and classrooms. However, the co-op does not own the land, which is going up for sale at a value of $700,000, putting the co-op in a situation where they could lose their beloved base.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't they buy it in the first place? Why did this other guy buy it?
I think he bought the whole property and just said, yeah, if you guys want to build there. Yeah. And then, yeah. Hmm. Silver lining, though, the property owners have provided the co-op with the first right of refusal to purchase with a decision deadline of May 1st, 2024. To preserve their home and legacy, the Paddler Co-op has launched the Sweet Home Paddler Co-op capital campaign. Although the minimum amount the co-op needs to raise by June 1st for a down payment on the property is technically $150,000, according to the co-op, this would be an unsustainable mortgage. The initiative instead aims to raise $250,000 to secure a more feasible payment. And if they can reach $350,000, they would be able to operate at a cost without impacting their current budget. With the deadlines looming within a few short months, the co-op is wasting no time to act. This is something that, even though I've got no part of them, no dealings with them, mm-hmm. nothing. If I were to win like a few million dollars,
I know you'd want to help
in the lottery right now. I would just waltz in there and go, there's your $350,000.
I'm donating.
Yeah, I'll donate you $350,000. You guys do the rest, sort of thing, right? It says, we want to guarantee access to the river for future generations, Ryan O'Connor, the co-op's executive director, says. This purchase preserves a vital access point for whitewater paddlers. Palmer Rapids is a leading training ground known across Canada, and we don't want to see that disappear. Now, when you guys went and did your whitewater canoe course.
MKC.
That was up on the Madawaska.
Yeah.
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 According to O'Connor, the current property owners purchased the land 20 years ago with the intent of leasing it to the not-for-profit paddling organization to set up shop. However, circumstances have led the owners to decide to sell the property. Paddler Co-op is one of the largest paddling schools in Ontario, but its impact over the last two decades extends far beyond instruction. For many, the co-op represents a community where lifelong friendships are forged and a love for the outdoors is nurtured. And that's there's a lot of people that it's just like summer camps,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you go there once and then you go there again and you go there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people you meet, you chat mm-hmm. with, and you're out there learning, paddling and using the skills you learned. And then, hey, let's all sign up for another course to get more skills and stuff. And it just goes from there. So, you know, if you're a teenager and you go out to learn your basic skills,
yeah.
you could still be paddling with those people that you were,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
40 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, you into your retirement, you're still going out
yeah.
paddling with these people.
And
that
I'm sure you see that.
You learn from, right? That's the sort of mm-hmm. thing that happens.
Because you go there, and when we went to MKC, we were talking to some of the paddlers there, and they're saying that they started by taking a few courses at MKC,
mm-hmm.
became instructors at MKC, and then, like, one of the guys that was our instructor, he's off doing, he does black feather trips and stuff, and he still comes back occasionally to MKC to teach for a weekend or two a summer, and or like a special package that's put on, and he'll come back and do that. But yeah, you see him do that all the time. And so yeah. it becomes a lifelong thing that they'll do, right?
It's a way to do it, man. Mm-hmm. That's how it all starts.
I'm curious, like 20 years ago, what this property first cost. It's probably in the range of $50,000.
Yeah, probably nowhere near what it is now.
Yeah.
Right? And if there's a bidding war, they go up a lot higher than $700,000.
Yeah, which is nice that they have first right to refuse,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just coming up with that money.
Mm-hmm.
The Lower Madawaska is a learning ground for many Ontario paddlers, providing their introduction to whitewater kayaking and canoeing. However, all of the access points to the Madawaska in Palmer Rapids are on private land. While these access points are available now, they could be compromised with future exchange of ownership. So if somebody sells their property and yeah. somebody, yeah, you're not coming on my land now.
Yeah, get out my yard.
You hear a lot of that through the states.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, a lot of that through the states.
yeah.
I don't, and I know that it does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen in Canada, but I don't think it happens anywhere near as much.
I don't think so. But the problem is all it takes is one bad experience.
Yeah.
So, like, you have, it's like, yeah, whatever, you guys can use this access way, this portage, this whatever.
And then someone trashes it.
And then just somebody comes along on weekend and has a party, has a bonfire, burns a few trees down. And then it's like, well, enough of that.
Yeah.
Right? And so all it takes is one individual, again, to take away. Well, that's why we can't have nice things.
Right.
Right.
O'Connor shares that as a not-for-profit, should they own the property, they can create a trust or a fund to ensure paddlers can access the Madawaska decades from now, regardless of whether the co-op still exists as a business.
And that would be good if they can.
Yeah.
And again, there'd be a lot of legalese, because if they're no longer a co-op, then who owns it? Mm-hmm. Does it become a conservation property or something? Right.
Well, see, there's. I don't know if you'd call this. Along the same sort of thing, down in St. Catharines,
mm-hmm.
there's a merry-go-round, a carousel.
Yeah.
And the people that owned it left it to the city, Port Dalhousie,
yeah.
and said, you can never raise the price.
Oh.
It's still to this day 5 cents a ride. So you give them, you know, and a lot of people, they'll just go around once or twice or something like that. And it's still run and money set up to keep it going, that sort of thing. So I got to think that would be the same sort of legalese saying you can never cut off.
You can never cut off.
If you buy
access.
This property, be aware you can never cut off access to people that want to go and paddle.
The only way you can do that is by making it a conservation property. You have to give it up to the conservation trust.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't force a private owner to do that.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing.
Add a right-of-way into like, if there's some sort of right-of-way, and so there...
Or you split your property,
and
you sold half it to one guy and half to the other guy, and the road to the access went right between the two.
Ideally, it would be best if it stays as a co-op for the next 100 years type thing, and it's maintained as a mm-hmm. co-op. It's going to be tough if they can't get up enough initial funding to... They're trying to get their mortgage down.
Well, I think they're like $120,000 already.
Yeah, and what they need to do is they need to make enough of a down payment so their mortgage is less than $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that range, then maybe they're paying, you know, $3,500 a month or $4,000 a month or something, right?
Yeah.
So that's what they need to do is get it down low enough for them to afford to do that, because, you know, they're not running any trips in the winter. So whatever they make over the summer has to carry them through the rest of the year.
Carry them through. Yeah. We believe in securing a space by paddlers and for paddlers, O'Connor says. If we aren't looking at access now, we risk a day when we don't have these places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the whole point is just making sure there's access. I don't think the whole big deal is making sure the co-op stays there.
Yeah.
Like that they're selling trips and all this.
No.
They're more concerned that
in the future.
That there's like, access to the water.
Once private entities get their hands on stuff like this, they're going to build a cottage and block access.
Yeah.
My property.
Yeah. The urgency of the campaign is palpable. If the fundraising goal is not met by June 1st, the property will be listed for sale. Should the property be sold to someone else, there is no guarantees for the co-op. Looking at the economics of the sale, O'Connor is certain their cost to maintain a lease would increase substantially. However, there's a strong sense of optimism. The co-op contributed $50,000 from its reserve funds to kick off the campaign. To date, it has now garnered more than $120,000, demonstrating the community support. For O'Connor and the cooperative, they are on full tilt to reach the goal and make the purchase. We are committed to and confident, and everyone in our paddling community has told us we are doing the right thing. If you want to help out, go to paddlercoop.ca. Co-op has the hyphen in the middle of it, co-op.ca. Go to the website, find out more about the co-op, and there is also a link to donate. I'm hoping that they're able to do it and keep the place open.
Yep.
I mean, not just keep the access, keep, like I say, it's a good learning school. It's a good
business,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And as we progress and as properties and lands get more expensive, there are more and more people who do have that expendable income that really want to, hey, I like this piece of property. I like mm-hmm. this river access. Private.
Yeah.
Right. So it'd be good if they could achieve their funding goal and be able to purchase the property.
See, and if I had something like that, and people want to cut through my property, I'd make a stipulation like you have to portage wearing clown shoes.
Jeez. Of course.
You know why? It's because just pure entertainment on my behalf. So in my journey through Google this past couple of weeks, came across something about skiing. Which has nothing to do with paddling.
except for this specific topic.
Except for this, sort of. According to a report, California ski accidents are up nearly 50% over the last 2 years. This has been attributed to the rise of GoPro use.
Yeah, people put cameras on their heads so they take more risk. I got to make this an epic video.
Right. Selfie stops.
Oh,
yeah. And THC-laced gummies. That's quite a cocktail. And one person that they did the survey mentioned that chairlifts often smell like skunks when they should smell like pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had different
discussions,
experiences and discussions and stuff like that. And I had the question, have you noticed the rise in the smell of weed on canoe trips the last couple of years?
And myself, I haven't.
And we've even come across people on portages puffing away.
You have, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you get to the end of a portage and there's a group of people there, different ages too. It's not just young kids, mm-hmm. you know, damn young whippersnappers.
Yeah.
It's different ages and they're all sitting there and a couple of them are smoking up and, mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of people I know, even on, Facebook stuff like social media and stuff. They talk about gummies this, gummies that, getting gummies, 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 gummies. to the point where it's like, okay, you know what? Like, you guys are sound like a bunch of high schoolers from the 80s now. Like, enough. My whole opinion on it, you want to do it, that's your business. Go ahead, fill your booties. But I have concerns. It's just like, well, I go down the 401 in the morning some days.
Oh, I know. It's like, and why do I smell this on the highway?
When it's summer and the windows are open and you're getting a big whiff of weed on the 401 doing 100 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
And you're getting a big puff of weed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you on my road with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and why are you puffing on marijuana and stuff like that
at the same time you're recreating?
While you're paddling.
Yeah.
Like, you're going down a portage, you're carrying gear, you're...
It's already inherently dangerous. And now you're adding an aspect where you're not at your best, you're not at your peak performance, you're not, you don't have the, so you maybe feel a little bit more bulletproof, you're doing some riskier things because you're on gummies or you're smoked up or whatever. And I don't know, I think you're dulling the experience too. It's like, why would you go out there into the backcountry and dull that experience, dull your senses? It's like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's becoming more than just a beverage around the campfire at night. Mm-hmm. Like I say, I have no problems with that part.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to have problems
after supper, around the campfire,
when you're actually doing the part that you can get injured at, you know, carrying a bunch of gear down a portage, and you've got a joint hanging out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Or you've just popped a gummy before you decided to do
doesn't
the portage.
Doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't. So risky. My question is there a lot of statistics out there just waiting to happen?
I think
there
are.
Or are they happening and a report is just waiting to be written?
Yeah.
Like, this ski report has just come out.
Yeah.
So is there backcountry camping or camping in general sort of paddling report waiting to come out?
It's become, well, it's legal now.
Because it's legal,
And in many states in the United States, it's become legal. So it's not like people are doing an illegal activity necessarily, although there are specific situations where if you're in a self-powered watercraft, you can't be drunk. You could be charged under the Highway Traffic Act. No, the Don't Carriers Act. Watercraft, something. You'd be charged just like you do in a car.
Like you're in a car.
Yeah.
But you know what? Before it became legal, and I'm wondering if the legality part is what's doing it. Because I used to go on trips with people, and after dinner and everything, we'd be sitting around the fire, not going anywhere for the night.
Yeah.
And someone would spark something up, and it's like, go ahead, fill your booties.
Yeah.
But now it's like, all the time.
I know. Like,
it's almost like it's...
Why would you have that for breakfast?
Yeah. I knew people that they had it, like, the minute they would wake up in the mornings, they would spark it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you know what? Yeah, no. No. Yeah. It's all I on it. Like I say, I'll say it till I'm dead. I really don't care if you do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Time and place.
Exactly.
Is my... my thing. And I don't want to all of a sudden find a report come out. Yeah, Algonquin Park this year, just using Algonquin as an example, there was a massive increase. 100 people were injured.
Yeah.
And it was all put down to gummies.
Mm-hmm. Or smoking or whatever.
So now we're going to put these rules into place.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you've just ruined it for everybody. As you say, this is why we can't have nice things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just curious of is it happening?
Is it more?
And a report's just waiting to be written?
Or? Honestly, myself, I have not come across it, but I tend to go in difficult to get to places.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I tend to go when I go backcountry camping and stuff. So I don't spend a lot of time in the front country or like Canoe Lake or Easy Access Lakes or whatever. So maybe that's why I don't have that much experience. And I often have my kids with me, so maybe people see that and they don't spark up because I got my kids with
me. Could
be. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I haven't noticed it. I haven't seen it. I haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not happening.
We've seen it a few times on portages and whatnot. And it's just like...
But like you said, time and place. Like,
yeah.
It's like nobody's going to have... Like, who starts their day at like 7 a.m. with a shot of whiskey? It's like, it's like there's time.
Kevin Kellen. No, I'm sure even he doesn't do that.
I'm sure he doesn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's it's I don't know what, like, if you're out there to enjoy the backcountry and the woods and canoeing and maybe a little bit of whitewater, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it's like, why are you dulling your senses? Why are you blinding yourself?
Wait till you're done the the dangerous parts.
In a chair or in a campfire. Stable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And stay away from the campfire.
Yes. Yes. Don't dance in the campfire.
But to sort of stay on the same track of drugs, billionaire Peter Thiel had backed a controversial Olympic-style contest that would allow competitors to take body-altering drugs and harness advances in science and technology to push the perceived limit of what's possible for human beings.
I think this would be a hoot. Because, you know, in regular competition in Olympics and whatever, it's like, no drugging, no steroid use, no enhancements. Keep it fair across the board for humanity. But if we had a separate...
Right? So the Enhanced Game founder, founded by Oxford graduate Aaron D'Souza, once best known for leading Thiel's lawsuit against Gawker Media, 2013, has so far battled off critics, stressing it will champion science and innovation without exposing athletes to health risks.
Hmm.
It also welcomes all adults to apply to compete, regardless of whether they're all natural, adaptive, or enhanced, an amateur or former Olympian, the organizers say, expecting to open registration later this year ahead of to-be-confirmed event dates.
I think that'll be a hoot.
I'm thinking...
No holds barred.
Enhanced games have drawn controversy over fears of consequences of using drugs to push human beings to their limits.
People are doing that anyways.
Right? Competition remains interesting to spectators as a number of athletes come out in support of the games. Some 900 athletes have already shown willingness to take part, D'Souza claims. Still, the event has ruffled the feathers among experts who warn against trialing even willing competitors plied with quantities of performance-enhancing substances. And the organizers of the anticipated competition say they will mitigate risk with pre-competition full system medical screening protocol to help monitor heart risks and other possible complications.
People are going to die.
Meaning they're going to cover their asses.
Yes, yeah, they have to.
People are going to die. Oh, you're going to see all these, welcome to the Roid Rage 500.
Well, think
full about contact.
Think about back in the day when you think, oh, this is a funny movie. That'll never happen. You know, Running Man with Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're going to start seeing some of these. You have to swim with the alligators.
That's, you know, yeah, the obstacle course includes alligator wrestling. Because the games have been designed by athletes for athletes, athletes' rights are central to our decision-making, which is why we have a fair remuneration structure and are protecting our athletes' rights to bodily autonomy. It's their bodies. They can do with what they want.
Mm-hmm.
They argue that performance enhancements are and always have been a integral part of sports, wrongly closeted and stigmatized instead of explored. Rather than penalizing the widespread use of performance enhancements, the enhanced movement embraces enhanced athletes. We want to see what the humans are truly capable of. We want to end the oppression of science in sports and let human potential reach its maximum.
Well,
So I guess it's only drugs, though, right? Like, we're not going to be racing against...
robots?
Like, cyber...
Cyborgs? With AI?
Right? He wins that running race every year. Must be them big old cyborg legs.
Must be the jetpack.
Yeah. So, this... yeah. Sounds fun. Dr. Grigory Rodchenkov, whistleblower and former head of Russia's National Anti-Doping Lab, called the event a danger to health and to sport.
But if people go into it willingly...
Full details of how the competition will be run and what it will look like are expected to follow in mid-2024. Location for the game has also not been disclosed. I'll give you 100-to-1 odds right now. It's in Russia. Saudi Arabia or something.
Somewhere where the rules and the laws are relaxed.
Right? The organizers say the games have been set up to utilize pre-existing infrastructures, unlike the Olympics, and could take place in top university facilities if needed. Competitors are expected to compete across the fields of athletics, aquatics, combat. I think that would be martial arts.
Yeah.
Gymnastics and strength. So I'm thinking martial arts is going to be something along things I've seen in anime programs, right? Flames coming out of their hands. Muscles all of a sudden expanding. And cutting people in half. Yeah. Driving their hand right through someone's chest. Right out their back. It's going to be awesome! I can't wait to buy my tickets now.
Yeah.
So, of course. I mean, I would be interested in seeing the results. Again, you do not connect this to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympics are just natural, hardworking.
Everybody's on it. Yeah.
If you want to get an enhanced series going, you make sure that it's, you know, totally separate.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
I would be interested in seeing the results from the paddle sports between non-enhanced and enhanced athletes.
I'd like to see any sports. I'm very curious about that because, like, when especially the effort and the oxygenation and stuff like that, that's key, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to paddle a slalom course, it's, you know, if you have an enhanced strength, you're going to be able to use oxygen a lot better and yada, yada, yada. Then I'm curious how much of an advantage it is.
Because yeah. Like, I mean, are you talking like a second, 2 seconds, three yeah. seconds? Or are you talking they just took 3 minutes off the world record? You know, like, is yeah. I'd be interested in seeing what the difference yeah. is by having that enhancement.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, get opinions from different parts of the sports, from yeah. the athletes to the coaches to the organizers, and ask them if the risk to their the athlete's health make that big of a difference at the finish line.
Yes. And so think of it from, I'm just thinking of like the 100 meter dash. So you can increase your ability to absorb oxygen and breathe in and get more of that into your system, increase your performance, your strength, your stamina. But the human body is still fallible. Mm-hmm. So are you going to do the 100-meter dash in like 6 or 7 seconds, but you throw a foot into the crowd, right? Your body can only handle so much.
Right.
Right? So the bones still break. The ligaments still tear, right?
Yeah, if you can run a 10-second race
mm-hmm.
without enhancement, and you're you know, an hour and a half later, you're feeling great again.
Yeah,
I don't know what the time is.
Yeah,
versus you do all these enhancements
yeah.
and you cut a second and a half off that 10 seconds.
But you're down for 3 months.
But you're down for 3 months, and chances are you're never going to breathe properly again. Like, is it worth it?
I know.
You know? But yeah, I would just be more interested in seeing how big of a difference
mm-hmm.
it would be.
Yes.
You know? Like, yeah. now that it's out in the open and they're doing all these different things, and what kind of scandals would they have at the enhanced game? Are they going to have to draw a line on the type of enhancements at some point?
No robotics.
No, like, I mean, there's drugs out there, you know, are downright, you run two races, you're dead.
Yeah. So sort of maybe there's something that is just a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Or like, because you see the people who get all roided up and it's like, his muscles are too big. Like, mm-hmm. what happened there? That's unusual.
Yeah.
Right? That's got to be steroids. That's too much.
Yeah.
Can your heart handle that?
Interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to see some races.
Yeah. I just want to see those really roided up rowers going to town.
But chances are, well, especially with rowing, it's going to be more of an oxygenation thing. And so if you can enhance your blood supply, then that'll be different because you don't want to be too big to win a rowing race or
a
running race. Yeah, you don't want to be big and bulky. So you're going to see different people aiming in different directions depending on the type of sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, powerlifting, you're going to see people as big as a tree.
Yeah.
Right? But
you got to lift two weights, two barbells, not just one.
Yeah.
But no, like when you get the canoeing and stuff like that, you know, in the Olympics,
it's
and stuff,
all about oxygen.
And yeah, you see these guys going, like, how much faster are those arms going
to
go?
Well, what's funny too is, and just thinking back to all the people I see who compete at a high level in rowing and scull and whatever, massive shoulders and arms, but they have the tiniest little legs.
Yeah. They're all, they look like Gru.
Yeah. Yeah. You skipped leg day, did you?
You skipped leg day. Day 7,000, skipped leg day. yeah, you know what? Like, it's I don't know. I think it's a fine-edged
it
knife
is.
That they're on.
And so I would assume that they're going to go into it from the perspective everybody's going to have to sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Because the last thing...
Oh, there's got to be a big cover your ass situation going
time.
On.
Well, right off the top, if there's any sporting event where there's some sort of tragedy, then that you're going to see that, oh, they called the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very tragic. We lost an individual. But if it's enhanced games, chances are you're going to want to say, well, we kind of expected this. We knew that that power lifter was kind of probably going to explode his heart. So we're going to continue the competition, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine it could be a perspective along that line because anybody who's enhancing themselves, there's high risk, high health risk.
You know, one of the very first forms they're going to sign is, if something happens to you, the enhanced games are not held responsible.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You cannot sue
and
us.
And we're not
you
stopping cannot. The games.
Yeah.
We've invested money.
The janitors are coming out. They're moving your carcass to the side, exactly. And we're continuing.
Yeah.
If you're on a marathon, you just kick you to the side. We keep on going. It's up to your team to collect your carcass. I don't know. We'll have to
be interesting.
Have to see what happens there.
Mm-hmm. No holds barred, no rules.
No holds barred, enhanced games.
Yeah.
The money they would make on TV.
I think so. I think so.
People would tune in just
absolutely.
like rubberneckers when they pass drive by a car accident on the highway.
Absolutely.
Everybody slows down because they just have to look.
Yeah. It's in the opposite lanes. It doesn't affect us, but we're going to drag traffic right to a complete stop to look.
Right? Yeah. You know what? There'd be, like I say, the martial arts ones, I would watch some of those. I'd probably watch a few of them just to see if they...
Just to see what's going
on. Yeah. You know, like somebody punches somebody in the arm and their arm falls off. Okay, I'm going to keep watching that. But if it's just regular, just faster, stronger, harder hits that... Aren't really doing it. Okay, I'm not going to watch this anymore.
Yeah.
There's not enough blood and guts, right? and the paddling ones. I'd be more interested in the paddling events,
times. Like to see what the advantages would be, like timing.
Yeah. Because I'm just thinking further down the line, if I really want to compete on a portage trip.
Yeehaw!
I'm going to hit up that athlete. Yeah. Hey, buddy, what'd you take there?
I'm going to... My
M&Ms and gummies.
My portage goats are going to be on steroids.
Right? See?
My pack goats.
Pack goats and a riding donkey. Yeah. Awesome. Last thing is the word of the day. The word of the day is
I appreciate you finding
Sudoku. Sudoku. Derek is a Sudoku sensei. Sudoku is the phenomenon of acquiring reading materials, but letting them pile up in one's home without reading them. The term is also used to refer to books ready for reading later when they are on a bookshelf. The term originated and was used between 1868 and 1912 as a Japanese slang. Derek engages in Sudoku. He is keeping the tradition alive.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Thank you, Derek. That, I came across that a couple weeks ago, and I totally forgot. And then this week, I'm sitting there, oh, wait a minute.
I've got a word.
I got a word for Derek. Do you have any new books lately?
I got some for Christmas. There's some floaties in my beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We are drinking Youngling Hershey's Chocolate Porter.
Do you remember who brought this to you?
No, I got that was so
at,
much.
That was at the Adventure, Quiet Adventure.
Quiet Adventure Symposium. It all ended up in my beer fridge. But
so
yeah,
good.
It was actually quite good. Because you usually get chocolate porters and you can't taste the chocolate.
Yeah.
But the Hershey's Chocolate Porter.
They melted a chocolate bar right into that.
I think they're, and that's what you get at the bottom.
Yuengling Hershey's Chocolate Porter.
A little bit of chocolate right at the bottom there.
Brewed tasty. By Yuengling & Son, Inc., Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Alrighty.
Very good. Thank you to whoever brought that.
Yes. Anything else?
I do not.
Really? Why not? Hey, you got any plans for the summer?
Now that I have a term for it, I'm going to become a sensei at the Sudoku. See, I have to learn how to write it, say
Sudoku.
It too. I need to learn how to pronounce it.
Yeah. I just know because Shogun's on TV right now. Alrighty. Well, that's all I got this week as well then. Now, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can download or stream all our episodes there. And if you like to listen and you're good with YouTube and not all the podcasty stuff, just go to our YouTube page and you can listen to our episode there as well.
There you go.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.